Hello.
Hi, David. It's Mike. How are you?
Hey, Mike.
Thanks for agreeing to the interview, David. I'm sure this is going to be of enormous interest to people. Firstly, could you give us an update on the Geneva conference that you attended last week?
Sure. Well, the conference was held at the University of Geneva. I'd say roughly 25 people attended, a good mixture of people, representatives of various Blink projects like Chess 960 and malaria control, LHG at home, climate prediction. Most of the European projects were there. Ron Walton and I were there representing Blink. People from World Community Grid and Blink Stats and Grid Republic were also there.
A fair proportion based across the board in that case.
Yeah, pretty much, except for, only one American project, namely David Kim from Rosetta at Home, was able to attend, but a good selection of other people. So, in large part, it was the main goal is just to have everybody meet everybody else, talk about what they're doing, form collaborations, you know, do some brainstorming, get ideas. So we had one day of presentations from everybody, and then the second day was devoted to discussions of a variety of topics, such as the credit system in Boink, integrating Boink with grids, account management systems and the role that they could potentially have, issues in running projects, and at the end we had what we call the wish list session, where we just went around the room and everybody said what they wanted added or changed in Boink. So I came back with a fairly long list of things to do for the next year.
Could you give us some idea of some of these wish list items?
Well, they're pretty much all over the map. One item is integrating BitTorrent in Boink, so we can efficiently distribute identical copies of big files. Supporting Java. A lot of the wish list items had to do with account management systems. Trying to integrate the basic idea is to figure out some way of integrating some of the community related features of Boink a little bit better. So right now we have the system where every project has its own user database, its own set of profiles, its own set of teams. It's a bit of a nuisance for users and teams to manage all these different things, and there's no interconnection between them. There's no way to, have references from one project site to message boards or profiles on another site. And account managers like Grid Republic and Boink Account Manager, one of their important roles is to centralize these community-related features. So we're basically trying to figure out some way where the features can be centralized, or at least given a centralized view, but still have still have projects retain control over their own community data.
In effect, you're looking for a central cross-project database. In effect, then.
Well, it's a little bit unclear how it would actually work. For example, we talked about the idea of extending profiles to include buddy lists. So, in your profile, in addition to describing yourself, you could give links to your friends. You know, kind of like a lot of these community-related sites.
Oh yes, yeah.
And those profiles could potentially exist on that same project, or they could exist on a different project, or they could be profiles on account managers. which are, you know, these things that sort of live above the level of projects.
Yes, yeah.
So there wouldn't necessarily be a centralized database of anything. Of course, the account managers have their own databases, and for people who use the account managers, they would automatically have this kind of universal identity that would span projects.
I'm sure that that would be extremely welcome, because, as you rightly said, is that people would crunch on multiple projects, but in order to look at what their projects are, they have to go into various databases and different forums. I think a centralized forum or a database would be an excellent idea from the members' point of view. It would be very welcome as well, I should think.
Yeah. So it's a, you know, it's a question of how to implement it, and how to have the projects hang on to their autonomy. I mean, one of the things I've always avoided in Boink is having any kind of centralized authority, or I never, as you probably know, I never wanted Boink itself to be a central server or to have to give approval to projects. I wanted to let projects retain total autonomy. So we're trying to walk a fine line with this kind of thing.
That is very understandable, because, as you said, is that if it's centralized, is that people may have the impression in their courses that it's being controlled from a central point, which, as you said, is not ideal, but from any stretch of imagination. You ran a funding exercise. How did that come on? Your contributions from members? Have you got enough money to keep going? Let's put it that way.
Well, one thing we should keep very clear is the distinction between Boink, which is a project based here at UC Berkeley, and SETI at Home, which is a completely different project based here at Berkeley. We're actually in the same room, but organizationally we're two different projects. So Boink itself is very well funded. We're not rich, but we have funding from the National Science Foundation, which is the American, you know, the United States federal government funding, about maybe two more years worth of funding, and we're in the process of writing more grant applications. What we're doing in Boink is viewed as very successful by the National Science Foundation, and they're eager to see us keep going. Now, SETI at Home is a different thing. SETI at Home receives no money from the federal government and has had to scrape by getting money from companies. We got some from the state of California a few years back. And earlier this year, we did a fundraising drive to get donations from our participants, which was successful. I think we raised about $250,000. And we're going to do another one later this year. There was some discussion at the Boink workshop about how small projects, like, for example, Chess 960 or Prime Grid, which are basically hobby projects, the projects that private individuals run essentially out of their own house, you know, and they don't receive any kind of government support.
No, not at all.
And those projects, and also, I believe, BoinkStats, use Google Ads to get basically enough money to pay their ISP bill and rent servers. So I should say that one of the very inspiring things about the workshop was that several of the attendees were not from universities. They were people who don't get any money from their involvement in Boink. The most extreme example being a guy named Riedisch, who came from Lithuania, and to save money, he came on the bus and had a 28-hour bus ride. And he does work for several Boink projects, so it's to me, it's very inspiring that there are people working on Boink at a very sophisticated level, fixing bugs, writing code, who do it for free and who have other jobs to pay their bills.
That sort of dedication obviously shows a great love of the platform from that point of view. So Boink as such does not require funding, although projects like SETI and other projects might need funding, but your funding is secure. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, funding Boink itself, like I say, is well funded. There are rich projects and poor projects. Rosetta at Home is part of a big, well-funded laboratory at the University of Washington, and they're basically awash in money. Most of the other projects, including climate prediction, SETI at Home, they're getting by, but money is an issue, and they can't afford to have as many paid staff members as they would like.
Which is a great pity, considering the contribution that some of these projects are giving to us, basically, because some of them are exceedingly important. Climate prediction, Rosetta, that they have an enormous impact on the world as a whole, or can have, which I think is great. And it's a pity that they have to fight for funds.
Well, to some extent, all science research projects have to fight for funds, and probably 9 out of 10 research projects in general have less money than they would like. So it's just the way of the world. Everybody keeps going, and we're getting a lot done regardless of the money situation.
Is there anything constructive that Boink participants could assist in, for example?
Well, outside of running it on your own computers, helping us get new participants, a couple of the major themes of the workshop were how to increase our user base beyond its current level, which is, roughly 400,000, get it up into the millions. Basically, to expand out from a user base of computer hobbyists, predominantly male, into the general PC owner population, which includes a lot of women, old people, children. We talked a lot about how to make the software more user-friendly. We're working on a new version of the Boink Manager, which will be super simple, entirely graphical. It won't have any of this complexity that the current Boink Manager does.
Is perhaps what was originally Boink moved on from SETI, I suppose, in a lot of respects. It then became, from a lot of people's point of view, a fairly complex platform. Do you think that originally, bearing in mind the number of participants that there were in SETI, which then moved across to Boink, do you think that the change from one platform to another, which at its time obviously had a great number of teething problems, we're all aware of them, do you think that affected people's willingness to come across to Boink? Because obviously there were millions of people, or millions of clients on SETI, which apparently just now are not doing Boink.
It's not that dramatic, but there was quite a large loss of participants. It went down from roughly 500,000 to maybe half of that when we made the transition. And a big factor there is, when we designed Boink, we put in a lot of controls, a lot of bells and whistles. There are these general preferences where you can control everything from your network bandwidth to your, what time of day it computes, the processor usage, memory limits, disk limits. We wanted to make the platform extremely powerful, and of course we also needed to be able to accommodate a huge range of projects like climate prediction, where a single work unit runs for 6 months. Doing all those things made Boink kind of large and complex, and we didn't succeed in hiding all of that complexity from the user. So when the when the classic SETI at home user installs Buoyant, and all of a sudden there are these configuration options, you know, do you want it to run as a service? There are these preferences you have to fill out. It can seem intimidating or threatening for a lot of people.
Okay, so,
we're getting back to that and trying to make it much more like the original SETI at home, in terms of installation being a single click. You know, you just download one thing, type in an email address, and you're off and running. But we want to still make this array of complex control features available for people who want it.
That's understandable, of course, is that the science behind some of these projects is extremely complex. And I think what may have put a lot of people off along the way was with SETI is that you downloaded a work unit, you did it, and it was going to take you an hour and a half. Of course, some of these, especially the climate prediction ones, as you've already said, could take months to complete. And I think what has put a lot of people off was the sheer size of these work units and the amount of time they're going to take to complete. And reading across boards, that has been an issue for some people. For some reason, I think they were so competitive, they thought that doing more units meant that they were doing more, when of course in effect that is not anywhere near necessarily the case, as we know. But I think it's a case of trying to convince people that yes, these work units might take you a week, a month, or 3 months to do, but nonetheless the work is still incredibly important. And I think this may be a problem why people may have not have gone across the Buoyant, because they downloaded some of these projects and look at the message board, sort of, God almighty, you know, I'm not going to spend my computer doing 3 weeks doing this work unit, yet they're quite happy to have their computer around for 3 weeks to process maybe 50 SETI units. It was a strange situation. I think it got too competitive, I think, in a lot of respects for a lot of people.
Yeah, certainly the moving from the idea of one work unit equals one point, so to speak, to having this system where credit is in units that are a little bit harder to nail down, that seemed to be troublesome for a lot of people.
Indeed. That is goes without saying, I think. It's a great pity, really, because these people were quite willing to give their computer time, perhaps 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, like a lot of us. Yet for some reason, when Buoyant came along, they thought that perhaps I'm wasting my time here, which wasn't the case, obviously. It was not the case, but I think it's converting them across to Buoyant because of the science more than anything else.
Yeah, well, you know, we hope to get a lot of those people back again. And the, you know, the other thing is that because of the range of applications that we're doing now, you know, which includes biology, environmental studies, and so forth, we hope to tap into a much larger audience of computers.